Hey folks, welcome to the Hang Your Own Hang podcast, a monthly podcast about hammocks, hammock camping, and everything related. Our goal is to enlighten you if you're a ground dweller, and to entertain you if you're already a tree dweller. I'm Jonathan Kupel, and this is my co-host, Mark Baldwin.
Morning, Jonathan.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, good. Hanging out here at work, doing our recording, and enjoying the sun that we've sort of been having the last few days.
Yeah, it's a nice change to finally see some good weather and to get ourselves prepared for some camping this year.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. It's been a really rough spring, and it just seems like it rains every day here. I mean, I know all the kids' sports are getting killed. Anybody that doesn't have a turf field, games are getting canceled, and it's just nuts. So hopefully it dies down some and we don't have some muddy trails to go out on this summer.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, it still beats tornadoes.
Yes, yes. And even in the winter, you can shovel snow. That's like
that's very true.
Yep.
So speaking of walking muddy trails, this month's guest is Frozen, who is a popular vlogger on YouTube and has been hiking the Appalachian Trail for the season. And he's actually well into the trail. I think by now he's up in the Massachusetts, Vermont, New England area by the time we publish.
Yeah, actually, let's see. According to Instagram, because his videos, he'll explain, are, you know, a week or so behind where he actually is. I think he's actually just got into Vermont within the last day or so.
Yeah, so by the time our listeners listen to this, generally speaking, he'll be in Vermont. And that being said, just a warning to our listeners, this episode, audio quality may be a little bit poorer than you expect. And that's simply because of the challenges of doing an audio recording with somebody who's has limited audio equipment. I think we're going to be working with him on his phone.
Yeah, there was a lot of challenges. It's always a challenge trying to interview a through hiker, figuring out our schedule with their schedule, and they don't know their schedule because how many miles they're getting in and what trail towns they're going to be in all. So yeah, it was a challenge, this one.
Yeah. So bear with us for this episode and on to the interview. Okay. So this month, I'm really excited. We're doing something a little different in that it's very unusual for us to not know when we're going to be doing our recordings. And a couple of months ago, Mark, you told me that you had an opportunity to get Frozen on the show, which I was really psyched about because I had seen some of his videos earlier and followed him on YouTube. And then you said, but he's going to be doing the AT.
Yep. So yeah, that was real interesting, and it's been a challenge between my schedule, your schedule, and Frozen's schedule to be able to actually talk to him. And tonight was actually scheduled about 2-3 hours ago,
something like that. Yeah, it's the most annoying scheduling event I've ever had for the podcast.
Hey, it's always a challenge,
but it worked. It was, yeah, it was challenging for everybody. But that, as an introduction, we have Frozen on actually from a zero or a set of zeros on the trail. Welcome, Frozen.
Hey, everybody. How's it going? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're really grateful that you were able to join us.
Yeah, I'm glad it finally worked out.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like this is kind of the second bookend on a set of AT hikers recordings that we did. We did one a few months ago. We talked a little bit about, you know, what the person's experience had been and what they kind of learned and that type of thing. I thought it would be a lot of fun to talk to you about your experience as you're going into it and as you're planning it, and what you've been kind of learning along the way since you're still in the middle of it.
Yeah.
And so maybe our listeners can learn a little bit more and actually have a second, some additional insight, I guess, into the trail hiking or long trail hiking experience. So just to introduce you a little bit to our audience, most of our audience that watches people on YouTube is probably familiar with you, but if they aren't, this is everyone. This is Frozen from Outdoor Adventures, which is your YouTube channel. You started that, I think, in 2014, right? A few years ago.
Yeah, 2014. I figured it would be hey, let's. Cause I had no idea how to backpack. I went with my Boy Scout friend who invited me out on the coldest night of the year. It was a January 18th polar vortex in Pittsburgh, and I remember talking to him, and it was on New Year's. I was like, "Hey, Happy New Year's!" And he's like, "Hey, man, haven't heard from you in a while. Do you want to go camping with me?" I'm like, "Yeah, where do you want to go?" He's like, or I'm like, "April or May," or and he's like, "No, I want to go in January. So get your stuff and come on with me."
Oh my
and
goodness!
At that point, I was like, "This is a great opportunity to see how, you know, just what we could get into with, you know, YouTube and backpacking," because I had never done any kind of backpacking at that point. But had a great time and ended up hiking, you know, solo after that. So.
Yeah, that's great. Had you done any camping at all, or were you pretty fresh to the whole experience?
I have done a little bit of car camping with him previously, okay. But nothing ever like putting on some weight and then moving anywhere. It was more like pull up the car and bring out the tent kind of thing.
Got it. Yeah. And it's a very different experience.
Definitely.
And so you went on that first time and you were hooked. Can you share a little bit more about what you really hooked you into the experience?
Just getting out there, just being able to, you know, see the sights, hear the sounds, and just, you know, kind of do something that not a lot of people do, I think was the big draw for me, you know, going on an adventure. And that's where the Outdoor Adventures names came from. I know it's kind of generic, but it really is like, you know, you get out there, you don't know what to expect. It's a complete adventure for me. It's complete freedom.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Now, when I was watching your videos to prep for this interview, one of the things I remember seeing in passing, hearing actually in passing, was you had mentioned that you could choose to be at home and depressed, or you could choose to be out on the trail, and this was what you had chosen. And I'm wondering if that's part of the driver for the desire to be out on the trail, or the desire to have that outdoor experience.
A few years ago, I was, you know, everybody goes through the whole 9-to-5 job thing, and it just gets to be really boring as far as the routine goes. I even try to mix up my daily routine, you know, do I take a shower first and then brush my teeth, or do I brush my teeth first and then take a shower? Some people like that routine in the morning. I, for one, cannot do anything just in the order over and over and over again. Mm. So I just became just depressed with life in general. Like I just didn't feel like I'm accomplishing anything, just going through the motions every day, day after day. It's just not what I wanted. And I wanted a big change. I wanted a big adventure. I wanted to do something crazy for once in my life. I'm probably one of those, you know, I like a stable, you know, a stable life, stable job, retirement. I'm just like everybody else that has their career kind of set in stone. I just turned 36 on the trail about a month ago, and I just wanted to live a little bit and do something crazy for once. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And yeah. You know, I was having a hard time even getting out of bed on the weekends. You know, even when there was, you know, just if I wanted to relax, I just didn't want to get out of bed. So I had to do something with my life, and here we are on the trail now. So.
Yeah, well, watching the videos, you're definitely getting up every morning.
Yeah, definitely.
So since you bring that up, what made you decide on doing the AT? I mean, that's a pretty big commitment, and you're doing a lot of backpacking as it is already with the YouTube. We've been watching your other trip videos and stuff, and they're small, you know, smaller long weekends and here and there, but this is more than just, you know, 20, 30 miles for a weekend. This is a pretty big commitment. What made you decide I'm going to hike the AT?
Okay. So there's a couple different reasons. One, we already talked about, obviously the depression, something needed to change. Another big driving factor, and this was probably one of the biggest factors, was my uncle. I've told this story hundreds of times, but my uncle, he is fisherman, hunter, trapper, hound dog competitions, everything that you could think of dealing with the outdoors, he did it. He was one of those, you know, 6'5" guys, huge dude, was always outside, built his own house in the middle of nowhere. You know, one day he was going hunting early in the morning before work. And he had an accident, you know, could happen to anyone. He went up in a tree stand and slipped off the top and woke up in a hospital completely paralyzed. So over the course of my 5 years of backpacking, I've always thought like, hey, this thru hiking thing is something that I want to do at some point, maybe when I'm 65, you know, when I retire. And that single event with my uncle really made me think, well, maybe I shouldn't wait. Maybe I won't have another chance. Maybe there's never really a good time to thru hike. It's just like having a baby. Like you can't really do enough planning. You just have to do it. You know what I mean? And it's that was another reason. Another one after that was, like I said, the routines. And I had lost a lot of faith in society. Just, people are just mean, you know, a whole bunch of reasons that I've kind of figured out here that, you know, it isn't so bad. I've pretty much completely changed, in my opinion, after a short 1,500-mile jaunt through the woods, which some people would find crazy. But I had done a longer trip on the Superior Hiking Trail in Minnesota. It was 2 weeks, 240 miles, and I just couldn't believe how much I enjoyed that trip. I kept thinking about it and dreaming about it, and then when it finally happened, I couldn't stop thinking about it. So that was a huge driving factor. That was my big shakedown for the AT a couple of years ago.
Wow, a nice short 250 miles. That's yeah. That's more than most people do.
Right. It was a great adventure.
That's great.
Yeah, it's more than a lot of folks do in their entire lifetime in terms of hiking.
And the only reason that happened was I had I've been with the company for 14 years. It's a nonprofit. I do like a systems administration, run the networks, internet security, all that good stuff. Hmm. And, you know, I had a sabbatical after 10 years. And that was the only reason I got out for that, you know, that 2 week trip. I had to take 2 weeks off. And they couldn't even contact me if something happened. So it was really nice to get able to do something like that.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, you can't be the one with the encryption keys for the database server.
Right, exactly.
It's going to be an issue. So knowing that you started in spring, in fact, I think you had an early start this spring.
Yeah, I started February 23rd.
Right. And just for those of listeners who are catching up, this is February 23rd, 2019. So for those of you in the future, you know, that was over 50 years ago. When did you? So considering you started in spring of 2019, when did you actually start your planning and, you know, in terms of the date or time and what did planning look like for you?
Okay. So this was a huge thing that I was stressing about, and I'm going to talk about some advice maybe afterwards with this, but, so I started saving, 2 years ago. And I really think people that want to have a relaxing, enjoyable thru hike should start saving about 2 years before their actual start date. There's a lot of things that happen out here, you know, and lots of opportunities, to go through, you know, saying yes to a lot of experiences will obviously cost more money than you just sticking to the trail every day. Mm-hmm. For instance, we took a few days in Boston, cost an arm and a leg, but I still had a blast doing it. So the saving for the trip, about 2 years. Planning for the trip, I started about 3 months prior to stepping on the trail. I had a good friend, a good hiking buddy, my buddy Gary, who also came with me on that Superior Hiking Trail trip I told you about. And he's like, honestly, man, plan the first 2 weeks and don't even bother after that because you're not going to stick to the plan. That's never been so true. It's really, I was straight away from my original plan after the fifth day. It's too hard to plan something this big. And just from what he was telling me, it was good not to plan, you know, everything out. I have someone in my tramway, Lucky is his trail name. He literally planned out every shelter from the beginning to Katahdin. And we are like 30 days, you know, before, like 30 days ahead of his schedule. So that you can just see how bad the planning is.
Wow.
So yeah, it's pretty crazy. As far as what the planning looked like, honestly, I picked a comfortable set of mileage. I was pretty comfortable doing 20 miles, 22 miles max on the trail. So I figured I would knock that down to about 15 and try to keep myself at 15 miles for the first 2 weeks until I hit the Great Smoky Mountains. And, you know, just every 4 days I would get off and go into town or go into a hostel that I knew had a shuttle or was close to a trail town and get groceries. So I had planned on that. And for the most part, that plan stuck pretty true. So I didn't really stray too far off of that. It was just, I was kind of a couple of days early than what I originally thought.
Got it. And are you using the paper guide for the AT, or are you using an online guide?
I am using both. So I have the Guthook app, which has been amazing on trail.
Oh, yeah.
The town stops, AWOL's guide is really good, and it has all the information laid out. I'd really suggest anyone doing this hike to get both guides.
And so do you carry the AWOL book with you?
I do not. I have the PDF, and I think I think that's actually easier because you can search the PDF and you could just, so there's telephone numbers and everything for hotels and hostels.
Got it. Instead
of looking at the book in the rain and trying to plug in the digits, you just click the link in the book. It's really easy.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Actually, I wanted to jump in here too on that with the planning. We're going to get into equipment and stuff from later on, but you're getting ready. You leave Pennsylvania, you drive down to Georgia, you're in your hotel or wherever you stayed the night before, and you wake up or you don't go to bed that night. What goes through your head when you go, you know what? I'm leaving. I'm hitting the trail in a couple hours. I think I'm going to change what pack I use and have to repack everything.
Right.
And I mean, even mentally, like, you know, you doing it, like you were saying, all this planning and stuff for months and starting at least the first couple of weeks. And then all of a sudden you basically just took those 3 months of planning and threw them out the window.
Yep. And that's what goes back to don't plan too far ahead. So we talked about the YouTube channel. I really, really trust most of my subscribers to offer their experience, because honestly, most of my subscribers are avid backpackers. And, you know, just like the rest of the hiking community, we should all listen to each other and take each other's advice within reason. So literally I had a comment that I was checking. I was trying to run off comments because I try to answer them every night. I was looking at about 8 o'clock one night before I left for Georgia. And it said, "Hey, just wanted to give you a heads up. You know, you might be eating more." And I noticed, you know, with even 4 days of your regular weekend food, which I planned on starting with until I got my hiker hunger, your pack looked pretty full. Also, a frameless pack might not be ideal if you're over a 20 pound total pack weight. So base weight plus food and water. And I started thinking about it, and I'm like, I texted my buddy Gary. I was like, "What pack did you carry?" He's like, "Well, I carried the Palante and with the hip belt." And I asked him, "Is it comfortable?" He's like, "No, it was actually really uncomfortable with 4 days of through hiker food after I got my hiker hunger." I was like, "Well, man, I don't want to do that." So I literally at 4 a.m, I went downstairs and switched packs back to the Arc Hall, and I left the light AF pack at home until I had a chance to drop it or to get it for my 3-season gear. And I think that worked out very well for me. But yeah, it was definitely a scramble. It was definitely like, "Oh my God, what do I do here?" kind of thing.
That's interesting. Besides your pack, did your subscribers contribute a lot to your pre-trip planning?
Yeah, a lot of them did, actually. A lot of them mostly had questions on, you know, why I was bringing it. So that's why I kind of decided to make a pre-AT video for literally every category. So I didn't have to explain it. I just kind of say, "Here, watch this video," you know what I mean?
But yeah, I might not have seen all of those.
there was so many. I don't blame you. I don't think I've seen all of them either. But there's been plenty of advice that they've taken here and there. You know, taking bits and pieces. You know, you do what you feel is right.
So you've been backpacking for a while and stuff. And how much do you think all your past trips and your shakedown trips actually contributed to your experience on the AT? Because I know Jonathan and I, when we were down in Trail Days a couple of years ago, we were interviewing some backpackers that were through hikers at the time. And there were some of them that, you know, they might have gone a night in their tent a couple times and that was their shakedown, or some of them their first night backpacking or camping was their first night on the trail. How valuable is your experience, do you think, for your enjoyment?
Well, first off, let me say that anyone can hike the AT if they want it bad enough. Let me also say that going on shakedown hikes and, you know, experiencing any kind of conditions as far as temperature, weather, and terrain can also increase your success rate. Let's put it that way. For instance, winter in the Smokies is absolutely insane. I had never experienced anything quite like it. And I've done, I think, a fairly decent amount of winter trips in the hammock. I did not take into consideration how windy it could be in the area with a hammock on the ridges, though, because I had never really experienced Appalachian Trail wind before. And that's been a big factor on here for discomfort or comfort, however you want to call it. I think if I would have to do this over again, I definitely would pick up like an underquilt protector or some kind of sock to go over the hammock, because I've had a few sleepless nights. But the big thing was that Superior Hiking Trail two-week trip, so I'm going to keep referring to, because that was really a good shakedown for the AT as far as not only the mental side of things, but the physical side of things as well.
Yeah, that's interesting that you bring up the underquilt protector. I actually kind of swear by it now in the cooler temperatures, and it's amazing how much you gain by adding that to your system.
I can imagine.
So you mentioned the food a little bit with your hiker hunger and stuff. How are you dealing with that? A few questions, but you know, first, obviously it seems like you really did underestimate the total calorie load that you'd hit while you were through hiking.
I was good the first couple weeks with just the stuff that I would usually bring on a normal everyday, you know, 3-day, 4-day, 5-day, whatever backpacking trip. Mm-hmm. And then I got to the Smokies and I think it just finally caught up with me. I was so tired on, you know, day 2 out of 4 to the Smokies. And that's when I really started to notice, okay, I need to eat more. I had myself weighed in Hot Springs right after the Smokies. I had lost 15, 16 pounds. And then every time after that, I started to gain it back because I kind of figured out what I needed. I'm still tweaking food. For anyone that doesn't know, at the time of this podcast, I'm at, I just entered Massachusetts, which is a little bit past 1500 miles. And about a week ago, I started switching up my food and the times I was eating it. I'm feeling a lot better now. But I highly recommend, you know, looking at multivitamins and B12 supplements and, you know, anything you could do to increase your energy, because you're just constantly hungry out here. And it's like an unsatisfying, like you can't quench your thirst kind of thing. You can't satisfy your appetite at all. So lots of proteins at night is what I found that really works for recovery. And then, you know, oatmeal works especially good in the mornings with some breakfast essentials, another oatmeal bar, not to get too in depth, but just, you got to constantly eat. And the size of a through hiking food bag is probably about double of a weekender's back or a food bag, which is pretty insane.
Wow. That's a lot. Yeah. Now, do you eat kind of on a schedule? Do you have like an eating schedule, or do you just kind of eat when you feel hungry during? I guess if you're always hungry, you have to have some kind of a schedule. Otherwise, you wouldn't move, right?
Yeah, I would actually probably eat all like 2 pounds of my snacks at 10 o'clock if I didn't have a schedule. So yeah, every 2 hours, or when you know you're about to go up a big hill, you know, eat a Snickers or something with nuts or almonds or something like that, chocolate, sugar rush you. And that's been working out good for me. Really try to space it out, because I have run out of food before like 11 o'clock and I'm like, oh boy, you know, what do I do here? But if you can make it to like 3-4 o'clock and still have an extra Lara bar or Snickers or whatever you enjoy eating, then you can, you know, make it to camp.
Yeah.
Terrible north sides after that. But
I was watching that, some of the choices that you make, it seems like you're doing a lot of the shopping on the trail. How are you managing to get yourself some variety in your diet? Because I can imagine that Norse sides must be pretty frustrating after a month or two of just eating that kind of thing.
Yeah, see, I'm the kind of person, even at home, I eat very plain. Like I don't marinate my chicken or anything. I just eat chicken, you know, baked chicken, whatever. And I kind of bring that back to the trail. Like I could eat Norse sides every day, as long as my snacks are kind of, you know, set up in some sort of variety pack. But, I've literally been eating North Sides for lunch and dinner since the start of Georgia 89 days ago, 90 days, whatever I'm at right now. And I'm fine with it. Mm-hmm. Every once in a while, though, I think I get this weird, like, stale North Sides. And I don't know if my body's just getting tired of it, but it completely rejects it and I have to dump it out. So I'm not sure what that's about.
How are you supplementing with, like, oil or fat and protein?
I am eating probably about 30 to 35 grams of protein after dinner, just via, you know, regular protein bars.
Oh, okay.
Oatmeal and whatever throughout the day, as far as oatmeal or oatmeal bars, anything I can do. I try to put the protein at the end of the night because that's what seems to recover my muscles the best. And I'm going back to the subscriber comments. They're the ones that try to tell me to do the protein at night and the carbs store in the mornings and stuff. Hmm. But yeah, it's been going good. It's been good. Not great, but it's been going good.
Good. Yeah. You're doing what, 20, 25 miles a lot of times, a lot of days. That's basically a marathon a day. That's a lot of calories.
It is. It's a lot. Yeah. And I'm maintaining my weight too. So I'm almost down to my weight. I should mention this. I forced myself to gain 15 pounds before I hit the trail, just so I would have a little bit of extra insulation for the winter. But I'm almost back to my normal weight now, which is soaking wet. It's like I'm 135 pounds, so I'm a tiny guy.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, is there anything that, like, nobody really discusses, whether in person, other people's YouTube videos, or on the bulletin boards and stuff, about the hiking the AT that you didn't see that you wished, or, you know, that might have helped prepare you a little bit more?
I think hygiene is one of those things that I think people are starting to open up with. There's a lot of male and especially female hygiene issues out here. You have to stay on top of it. I'm not going to go into too specifics, not to gross anyone out, but wet wipes are your friend. Wet wipes are definitely your friend, and use them every night. Chafing is a big issue out here. Moving away from the hygiene aspect, I've seen a lot of, how am I going to put this? People that don't really understand trail etiquette. Like last night, for instance, we had two people set up their tents in a six-person shelter. We got in about 8 o'clock after doing a 21-mile day, but we ended up somehow getting into the wrong city, the wrong town, got picked up by a local farmer who ended up taking us out to dinner at his local farm. Like, it's those little side trips that kind of don't make any sense. But anyway, off topic. We get to the shelter, and there's two tents set up, and there's two people in it, and they're all around listening to loud music and with fires next to a, you know, no fires on the ground, only stove sign. It's just like, you know, do you be that guy? Do you tell them, like, hey, you know, or do you tell them nicely, hey, could you, you know, not put your tent up in the shelter? Could you, I don't know. It's hard to talk about that thing without, you know, kind of being a jerk about it. But I feel like people should kind of just use common sense out here whenever it comes to trail etiquette, and there's just, people just aren't. So I think not a lot of people talk about that at all.
You're what, two thirds of the way done almost? Is that pretty much the one time that stands out? Is that probably pretty much the one time that stands out? Or, I mean, you don't have to get into everyone and, you know, name trail names and stuff or anything. Just,
well, most of the people that aren't following the trail etiquette are they're either flip-floppers, meaning they started at Harper's and they're kind of learning their way through now, or we haven't seen any Sobos mm-hmm. yet. So it's the weekend backpackers and the day hikers that are coming out. I've had a lot of dogs, you know, being off leash, even though every AT junction says keep your dogs on a leash. Well, you know, I love dogs. I have a dog for myself. I have a little beagle, and, you know, I always keep him on a leash. I know he would never bite anybody, but we had a guy named Perk, and he got laid up in the hospital for 4 days because he got bit by a dog that was off the leash onto the trail. Now, the owner paid for his whole hospital bill, but, you know, it took him off the trail for a few days because the dog wasn't on the leash. So it's just little stuff like that. I think people need to be aware of out here.
Yeah, nobody should have to deal with that.
No, not at all.
Yeah. You never know what the dog's going to do.
Exactly.
So that's tough.
Yeah. How's the hammocking situation been on the AT?
Oh, well, like I said, the wind has been an issue in some of the earlier days, but now it's just, it's been amazing. It's really easy to find a spot. My tramley that I'm in right now is really all about staying in shelters because they don't want to set up their tents at all, and I totally get that. So there have been some nights I'm hanging, 20 feet away from the privy, but, it works. Everything, there hasn't been a shelter or any part of the AT that I couldn't hang on.
Yeah, have you done any, I guess we'll call it a stealth camping to stay in the hammock and out of the shelters or off the ground?
So there are a lot of marked stealth sites. So I don't even know if you could call them stealth sites at this point. Basically sites that aren't at the shelter. They'll be on gut hooks, or I think they're in AWOL's guide too, that, they just have a little campsite where you could set up. Sometimes you could see them, sometimes you can't. I try not to create any spots unless it's, getting really, really late. And even then, we're up in the air. We're not really affecting the ground. Just make sure you, rake the leaves back, leave no trace kind of stuff. But
yeah,
I've probably done that maybe twice, so not very often. Most of it has been at one of the marked stealth sites or, like I said, at the shelters.
So you didn't say do anything to avoid regulations, for instance. If you got to stay in the shelter, you're staying in them, that type of thing.
Yeah, and I've seen a lot of ridge runners, especially in the beginning in Georgia, lots of, rangers, Shenandoahs were particularly strict about everything. And I honestly just don't want to deal with, a flashlight in my face at whatever time they want to wake me up. I don't know if it would ever happen. It's just not worth it to me. And there's plenty of spots out here. Now, Memorial Day weekend's coming up. Might have to bend the rules a little bit. I don't know. We'll see. But I'm not staying anywhere near the shelters on Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be all weekend warriors, right?
Yeah, exactly. Which I'm cool with. I just want sleep. That's all.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No doubt. I mean, that's why a lot of us have chosen hammocks over sleeping on the ground, is we want to sleep well.
Definitely. Big important thing out here.
Yeah. Is there anywhere where you haven't been able to stay in your hammock where you thought you should have been able to?
So there is a really great story actually about this. So I forget what shelter and what state it is in, but it's kind of irrelevant. The wind was coming in really, really crazy, and it was going right into the shelter site that at the time there were two members of my tramley in that I ended up, not even thinking about ever hiking with them again.
Excuse me. You said tramley?
Tramley, yes. It's like a trail family.
Okay, thank you. It's the second time I heard you say that, and I just wanted to call that out. Tremoli.
Yeah, I probably should. So sometimes you meet people that, kind of hike around you, and they just, they stay with you at the shelters, and you kind of go into town, share hotels, and eventually you call them your family, pretty much, your tramoli. You get really close with them.
Awesome, thank you.
Yeah, no problem. So anyway, I was going into the shelter. And I was planning on going behind the shelter just to get out of the wind, because I'm telling you, the wind was insane that night, and I just couldn't make it work out of the wind. So I went probably about 3.5 miles past the shelter, went to an old Jeep trail, just like, hey, I'm going to figure out, where this goes. And I saw a pre-existing campsite with a fire ring out of the wind, and I went there. So that's kind of the only time it hasn't worked for me that I had to push a little further to actually get out of the wind.
So you've been staying in your hammock for the last couple months or so. So what else is in your pack?
Okay. So I have a Dream Hammock Darien. Absolutely love 10 footer, and I have 11 foot hammock gear, Cuban fiber tarp over top of that with the doors. I have hammock gear and Enlighten equipment quilts, depending on what season it is. I started with hammock gear 20s and I moved to a 30-40 combo. And I'm carrying a light AF pack now. It's a frameless pack, so I got to watch really, how I pack it. But it's so comfortable, and it gets my base weight below 11 pounds, which is perfect for that pack. And that's probably about the majority of the main gear. I mean, we could go really into specifics and talk about pots and headlamps, but I don't think you guys care about that.
So you've got your shelter system. Do you combine the shelter system with like the clothes that you have and stuff to get to manage your temperatures and that type of thing?
Yeah. So right now I can get comfortably down to, I'd say 40 degrees. So I have a hoodie that I love to wear. It's a Melanzana microgrid hoodie. that it was coupled up with my wind pants or rain pants, however you want to look at it, will essentially get me down to around 35 without me getting overly cold. And it's gotten down to 35, 34 degrees a couple nights after I swapped out to my three season gear. But, you know, I don't always want to carry a 20 degree quilt because, man, at 60 degrees, you're just sweating and you don't sleep anyway. So It works really well with the clothing system.
So you started out with your winter gear and all down in Georgia. How far did you make it before you finally decided to switch out your 40 or your 20 for your 40 degree quilts?
So I had a window of opportunity where I didn't have to send my gear via the mail system, via the post office. And that was when my girlfriend came to visit me somewhere around Dragon's Tooth, mile 700 near Catawba, Virginia. Like, I was right outside of Roanoke, we'll say. And I took a chance because it was April 4th when I swapped out to my three-season gear, still a little early in the year, a little earlier than I wanted to. But that was the only time she could get off work. So I gave her all my winter stuff, gave her my backpack, switched out to the 40 degree from the 20s. And luckily, we've only had two nights in the 35 degree range where, you know, I still maintained my comfort, hadn't gotten any lower than that. But there was a good 2 week stretch that I'm a little worried I'm going to be cold because it's April 4th and we're still, you know, in the mountains. So
now how's your system been working with, you know, being up in the higher elevations and fog and dew and mist and rain and everything, you know, balancing the warmth and dryness and, you know, just trying to stay comfortable with all the moisture you've been having.
Right. So I've been pretty lucky as far as rain goes. There's only been a handful of days where it's just been just completely rainy, but a big issue has been fog. Especially toward the beginning, there was probably fog every night for a good solid 4 weeks straight. And it is incredibly hard to manage. Luckily, the times when it was foggy, I was only maybe 1 to 2 days outside of a town where I could just, you know, leave it up on the bed and just let it dry, or, you know, throw it in the dryer at the hotel or, you know, whatever, at the laundry station. But yeah, it becomes a huge issue, especially in the dense fog that the AT sees. I don't know if any people have ever seen how foggy the Appalachian Trail can be, but yeah, you can't see 5 feet in front of you. And that's not even an exaggeration. And you just wake up and like, why am I sweating so much? And you realize that's not sweat. That's just dampness in your quilt.
Oh my goodness.
It's really bad if you let it get that way.
Well, one of the things that I love to ask each of our guests is it's a constant question. If you've listened to the podcast at all, what if there was one thing that you could teach everybody, you know, be it camping related or be it not camping related, what would it be?
I thought about this before the trip because I kind of got a little cliff notes about what you guys were asking, but I would honestly, we went and talked about this before, but don't wait. There's never really a good time to do something like a crew hike, but if you really want it to happen bad enough, you can make it happen. It doesn't matter your income. I've seen people out here that have been homeless, jobless, and, you know, they're doing work for stay the whole way up the trail. It is a possibility for anyone to do it as long as they have the drive to do it.
Got it. Cool. Well, thanks. That's a really cool, it's a really cool way to think about it. You know, I know a lot of us, we get caught up in the day to day and think, you know, there's going to be a time when I can retire and do all those things that I want to do, man.
Yep. And like I said, in my uncle's case, that time never happened. So Seriously, don't wait.
Yeah, it makes sense. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things we like to always do before we finish off is a little round table on something that I just throw out there. And this might go back to what you were saying about showing up at the shelter last night. Stuff that I hate about camping, and it could be anything. Start with you, Frozen.
Stuff I hate about camping. Putting your wet clothes on in the morning. That's always a pain in the butt.
That does sound nasty.
It's terrible. Yeah. It's every day too. It doesn't matter if you didn't sweat or went 1 mile. Somehow your clothes are always damp in the morning. And that's literally the worst part about probably hiking the AT at this point. It's just getting those pants on for me is the worst. Cause I wear shorts with a liner. It's just 2 layers of soaking wetness at the beginning of the day. But it's super fun once they're on, you know.
Am I allowed to change my answer?
Okay, let's go with you then, Jonathan. You can't change it because you haven't given one yet.
Fine. Well, I'll tell you what I was going to say because I still feel pretty strongly about it. But I hate the smoke and campfires. Like, I like campfires. I think they're fun and they're warm, but I hate like smoke in the face. I hate like stinking like smoke after a couple of days. I hate waking up the next morning with my eyes burning. That, I guess that's my thing, man.
Well, you know, there's a way to fix that, right?
Don't do campfires.
Exactly.
Oh, I thought you were going to have something better than that.
Nope. That's
it. Well, how about you, Mark?
You know what? Actually, mine, I had one, but about a year ago, I figured out a way. Winter camping is, well, during winter camping, is putting on the cold clothes for actually having to get out from underneath the quilt to put on the cold clothes. And I never liked anything about that when it was frigid cold out. But now with the sidecar thing on my Chameleon, I just keep all my winter, you know, my day clothes stuffed in that. And then I just stuff it down at the end of my quilt for a little while to warm up, and then I change right in my hammock. And but although that, what Frozen, what you were saying about the wet clothes, that's a good thing there too. Yeah. But just getting out of the hammock in the morning when it's frigid out and there's snow on the ground, and that's the worst part about
it. There was a I don't know if I can go off on a tangent here, but
yeah,
of course.
I had an episode called Frozen Out, right? And it was at the, we were heading to the NOC over a span of 2 days. My rain jacket wetted out. I must not have positioned my rain kilt that I usually love wearing properly. And my shirt and socks and shoes and pants were just blocks of ice the next day. And I'm like, nope, I'm going into town today. I'm taking a zero. Like, I just didn't want to deal with it. But they were solid ice. Like, it was insane. Like, I could have broken my shorts over a tree if I wanted to.
How do you put on frozen clothes?
I did, and I wore my sleep clothes out all the way to the Nock. We did 7 miles or 25 miles up there, something ridiculous. So, yeah, it was, it was terrible. I didn't have anything else to wear.
Oh, wow.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Can you even fold your clothes at that point, or did you just like have this like board strapped to the top of your...
No, they were... They were blocks of ice. I'm not even joking. It was it went from 43 degrees down to 19 degrees in a single night, and it rained right before dark when it was above freezing. So it was one of my most uncomfortable times I've been, and then the Smokies happened, which made me even more uncomfortable.
Yeah. Sometimes you just got to get off the trail.
Yeah. To just be safe, because it was going down to single digits the following night. It was a good time for zero.
Yeah, makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Well, is there anything that has occurred to you while we were talking, or you know, as you've been thinking about the podcast, the upcoming podcast that we didn't touch on that you wanted to share with us, or that you wanted to mention, especially around the idea of planning for a through hike, or getting things together, or that type of thing?
Yeah, I wanted to talk just very briefly about, I'm going to re-say that because I screwed up that, if that's all right. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to talk very briefly on probably the hardest part about the AT, and that's just deciding to do it. I think it stops a lot of people, you know, oh my goodness, I have a stable job, you know, money's flowing, saving for retirement. I'm just going to quit and hike the AT now. Like, it's like out of the blue kind of stuff. But going back to what I said before, if you really want to get it done and really want to do something like a through hike, that's the hardest step, is committing to doing it.
Did it help you to commit to other people, or was it a commitment that you only made to yourself?
I think it was a commitment I made to myself. I kind of owed it to myself to have some kind of adventure and kind of get my head on straight. I was like, I thought I was really screwed up. I was probably more screwed up once I, you know, started hiking the trail and I kind of worked things out in my head. You know, not like crazy screwed up, just like I needed a break. I needed a break from the typical 9 to 5 and just do something different with my life, experience life. I was an introvert when I started and now I'm with a 5-person family, you know, visiting local farmers markets and stuff. And it's crazy how much I've changed as a person and how much more laid back I am. And how I don't look to control or plan or, you know, I just take things as they come now. And I think that's great in managing stress and overall mental health throughout your entire life. This hike has completely changed my entire life. I can honestly say that.
It'll be interesting for you to learn if that's a product of the trail or a product that goes on into the rest of your life.
I'm hoping it's the rest. Yeah.
That's great. Well, I guess I'm going to speak for me and Mark. I usually do. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing a little bit about your experience.
My pleasure. That was fun.
If you've heard us at all, we both think the whole idea of thru hiking is super cool, and both of us have chosen not to do it yet. Neither of us are yet committed.
Right.
And that's okay, but it's really awesome to be able to talk to other people who've made that choice and made it happen for themselves. We're living a little bit vicariously. So thank you so much.
And I've been listening to you guys since you interviewed Storm Crow when I first found out about you, so from Hammock here. So.
Oh, yeah, well, that's great. So, Mark, I thought it might be cool just to talk a little bit about the whole hammock camping scene and how a lot of our listeners are here in the U.S., but we're starting to see a bit of growth internationally. I got a letter in an email. I guess it's still a letter, right? I got a letter from somebody named Benjamin Coase, actually via Facebook. And he's one of our listeners in Europe. And he said he really liked the podcast, but he wanted to share that there was a fairly strong community and a growing community in Europe and internationally. So he actually spent a little bit of time telling me about it. He shared some people like Herzlbein, who's been on the forums for years, who is German and is a strong participant in the kind of the forums community. And there's actually a few forums out there now in Europe for people who are excited about adding a hammock to their kit.
Yeah, it does seem to be the big thing that I noticed that sort of shows that it's growing is there seems to be a lot of posts either on Facebook or the forums that are coming from people that are in Europe, and I think there's even been some down in Australia and around the world about finding equipment. You know, because the cottage vendors are so popular within the hammock community that they're having problems getting equipment, you know, to have something shipped from Hammock Gear to England or Spain. Sometimes the shipping and customs and all that charges could be more than the actual hammock itself.
Yeah, in fact, that was part of our discussion two months ago. Gosh, that was part of our discussion with James from the Little Shop of Hammocks up in Canada.
Yeah, last month. Yeah. So
it seems so long ago.
I know.
But yeah, about how, you know, the cost of international shipping affects his costs, but it also affects the costs of his customers.
Yeah, it's a big challenge. You know, of course, with Little Shop, that helps the Canadian hammockers because that's just national, not international for them. But still with the European and out west or out east, west really long way around.
That's right. We're one of the Eastern countries.
Yes. It's all relative.
Benjamin did share with me a number of links to some with some shippers and cottage vendors that are in the EU, as well as the URLs for some forums that are in the EU as well. So I will share those in our show notes rather than going over them here so that if you're in that marketplace, you can just click on the links from your phone, or you can go to our podcast page at hyohpodcast.com, and you can click on the show links right on our webpage and go and then start exploring some of those communities in the EU space. He didn't have any information on any communities that have started up in Asia or Africa or Australia. So I can't help you guys on that. But if any of our listeners have any information on that, certainly send that in. And we do have a lot of listeners that are international. I've been watching our analytics and watching our international numbers grow.
Yeah, it's been looking at that too, and it's been real. It's sort of wild hearing, you know, I just think of us as this little podcast, and there's people in other countries actually listening to us.
Yeah, in fact, the different metrics that we have line up pretty well, you know, with say like Facebook and our stats on our webpage and our stats coming out of our podcast measurements from like Apple and Google. Obviously, the U.S. is a significant majority of our listeners. That may be a big part of it because we're publishing in English and we're publishing as an American podcast. But when you add up Canada and the UK and Australia, the other, you know, significantly English-speaking countries, and then Sweden, Germany, Norway, the Netherlands, all countries in Western Europe, you know, that's approaching 15 to 20% of our listeners are now not domestic listeners.
Wow. Who would have ever thunk?
I know, right? There's even, I can see here, even Algeria, Spain. And then there's even some listeners in Singapore, Israel, and China. So welcome, I guess, is the best thing to say to all of you who are listening. We're glad you're a part of our audience, and we're hoping that you enjoy the podcast, and we hope that you enjoy learning a little bit about adding hammock camping to your camping repertoire.
What's up, everybody? It's this month's segment, Hanging Out with Gresham Spigiver. I am not solo this month, so lucky you guys, it's going to be less terrible than it was last month. I'm joined, yeah, no doubt, joined as almost always by Spigiver. Mark, how are things going, Mark?
Good, going really well. Sorry I took a month off and left you out there hanging on your own, but you know, sometimes things come up.
Well, weather gets bad, people get sick, you know, hurricanes, floods, you know, things happen. I get it. I feel bad for the people that had to listen to last month's, you know, Gresh-centric segment. I apparently do a lot better with flavor, but let's move straight into this.
Yeah, let's do it.
Before we get into this month's question, though, I've got a little note that I wrote to myself here that you've got some stuff to talk about for AT safety.
Yeah. So, you know, we did the segment a couple of months back about safety. It was primarily on female safety, but recent events have kind of brought safety to the forefront of people out hiking. And I just wanted to touch on that real briefly and just say, you know, our hearts, I think I speak for everyone on the podcast, our hearts, thoughts go out to everyone that was involved in the tragic incidents on the AT this past week. And I know when this is coming out, it's going to be a little bit in the past, but I just wanted to put a couple of things in perspective. There's a lot of talk right now about safety and about what are you doing to keep yourself safe out there. In the last 45 years of recorded history on the AT, there have been 10 murders. Let's put that into perspective. What is classified as the safest city in the U.S. is Logan, Utah. And in the last 12 years, there have been 5 murders there. So you can see over 45 years, there were 10 on the AT. In just a 12-year period, there were 5 in what's considered the safest. Now, also, think about this. Most people getting to the AT are doing it northbound, and they're flying in and going through Atlanta. Atlanta had 79 murders last year, and that is down from 110 in 2016. So the trail, while yes, this brings it to the forefront of everyone's thoughts, is still a very safe place to be.
I would probably much rather be on the trail than not on the trail as far as safety is concerned. And that's not even a joke. Like, I'm being very serious with that.
Yeah. I mean, we aren't even going to talk about, you know, Chicago, New York, LA. The numbers there are just frightening.
You have very literally a better chance of hitting the lottery than getting yourself murdered on the AT or basically any other trail. So if you do hit the lottery, I could use a dollar. Just going to put that out there.
All right. So let's jump into this one.
Yeah, that was super important. I wanted to get that out of the way. And thank you for putting that out there, Mark. That was
thanks for indulging me.
Yeah. No, that was great. I wished I'd thought about it more like that. But going into what we're actually here for this month, we've got a question from a Facebook post by Natasha Tucker. So what's up, Natasha Tucker?
Hey, Natasha.
What's up, girl? Have you guys discussed netting yet? I see hammocks with netting that zips on one side, both sides, one that drapes over and cinches around the ends. And do you have a preference for one over the other? And this was probably the biggest thing next to insulation when I first started hammock camping that gave me pause. When I started out, it was with an Eno, as I think a lot of people started out. And this was pre-Defender. Is that what they call their bug net?
I think you're right, yep.
Do you know? Yeah.
I think it is.
This was before that existed. So basically your only options were DIY or get somebody else to make one for you. Like my first one was a Buginator from Butt in a Sling.
That was my first one as well.
I cannot say enough things that are good about the Buginator. It took the design from Franke, the Franke style bug net, and basically jacked it and produced it, and it's amazing. So
that design is great.
It's bulletproof, and more importantly, it's effectively bug proof, especially with an underquilt.
With an underquilt. Yep, exactly. That's what a lot of people worry about, that you know, if I don't cinch it up all the way, or the bug's going to get in. And when you lay in there and you're on the diagonal, it's spread out, you've got that underquilt, and it seals it up really well.
So, to that end, if you're just starting out, you're needing something to keep the critters off of you, I'm sure there are several other people that sell that Franke style bug net, or if you're DIY inclined, you can find plans for a Franke style bug net somewhere. But that's definitely hands down my number one recommendation for a bug net if you don't have one that's integrated. There are other options that are standalone, like there's the TED net. It's top entry something or other. I didn't have a as good an experience with that. It worked. It kept bugs off of me. But ultimately, it wasn't as great. I think there's a Seep. Is that?
I don't know that one. I don't know. I saw just recently a guy had posted that, you know, he's getting into hammocking, and he had, I think he got like a hammock gear integrated net hammock, and he felt claustrophobic. And my suggestion to him was to go and look at something like the Sierra Madre, like the Nube or Strato systems, because those ones, your hammock hangs inside of almost like a netting tent that goes all the way down to the ground and has like a bathtub floor on it. So it feels a little bit more open, and you could get in it and change standing up, whatever. So it gives you a little bit more freedom there.
There's that. There's also Derek Hansen, basically, you know, Hammock Jesus number two next to Shug.
That's right.
Designed the Hug bug net, if anybody even remembers that. And it's effectively a half bug net that just covers your torso. The only part that would really be exposed outside of whatever kind of top quilt or blanket you'd use. That's another, they're reasonably priced option. You can get one from Arrowhead Equipment for about $40 ish. That was another one of my first ones. It might have actually been my first before the Buginator, just because of the cost. I'm super duper cheap. That takes us to the integrated.
Kind of the step in between, when I went from the Buginator, I still didn't have an integrated bug net, but I was getting into a little bit colder stuff, and I went with a sock design. So it was one of those that has, you know, an underquilt protector and a bug net kind of combined. And so that was my next step in this.
Yeah, that's, I feel like I've seen something about that. I'm not super familiar with it, but it doesn't sound terrible. Yeah.
So they've got a couple different designs out there. Some of them are cinch. So you get in your hammock and then you slide it up all the way to the head end and cinch it down. And then there are some out there that have zippers. So it's pretty much an integrated bug net that you zip open and get in and out. Kind of like a hybrid between the two. Yeah.
Nice. I like it. The bug net question is a really good one. I'm really loving this. We're talking more about bug nets than we have about anything so far.
Right.
And I mean, we're getting into this. I'm loving it.
So actually I have something, a prototype thing kind of on the way to me that I kind of put the idea out there and, someone has put together for me. And I will be testing out hopefully next weekend. That's kind of a sock, but a little bit a sock on steroids type deal. Trying to see what we can get to weight wise.
Oh, don't play with my emotions. At least give us something.
No, we're gonna put this one on hold till I make sure it's working.
Ah, all right. Let's move on to integrated though. Integrated bug nets are largely, and don't take this as gospel, but largely they're going to be the same. They're created to go, like every gathered in hammock, by and large, with the exception of something like a blackbird from Moorbonnet, is going to just be a straight up gathered in hammock. And the shape comes from the bug net or the overcover. Like it's,
exactly.
So, first of all, that's the important thing is dictating that lay. The next thing is going to be one thing that you've asked about here, Natasha Tucker from Facebook, is things that zip on one side, both sides. And that's entirely personal preference. I personally,
so what do you like?
I personally have a tendency to get out on one side of the hammock. But the thing is if I have a headless hammock, like if I've got a hammock that doesn't have a head end or a foot end, it's just whichever way you get in, mm-hmm. that direction of egress and ingress is going to change depending on
how you hang it,
which side I'm in.
Yeah.
So one on either side, love it. Absolutely love it. And then the new zippers that separate in the middle, even better.
Yeah, so I mean, there's definitely some advantages to having the zipper on each side. You don't have to worry about how you set it up so that you're getting in and out the right side. Like I get in the foot side, so I always just kind of lay back so that my head is going across, and that's pretty much the way I get in and out is on my foot side. I lay head right, foot left, so I get out the left hand side, in and out the left hand side all the time.
Same.
And I know that a lot of people do it differently, do it the opposite way.
The wrong way.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, we'll call it like it is, the wrong way. But, you know, the one downside to the way that I do that is when I'm in my one-sided, like my Darien, I can't reach out and grab something that's under me without having to reach all the way across the hammock because I don't have a zipper on my head side.
Yep. I mean, that's actually a really fantastic point that I'd never given any thought to because once I'm in, I'm effectively in and I've got, you know, ridgeline organizer and all that stuff that keeps everything inside with me. So I very infrequently have to reach out to get something, but you're right. Like, especially if you're, getting in from the left side and you're right handed, you're going to have to effectively go across the whole world to get at it.
The other thing that's a little bit more difficult is adjusting your underquilt.
Yes, God, yes. I love being able to just take both zippers, zip them down a little bit, and reach out on either side of me and get it quite right.
Yep.
So much convenience. We're living in the future.
Yeah, I've got to say, I like the convenience of having both of them. You know, some lazy days, rainy mornings, when I just want to do coffee from the hammock, I'll just light up the stove and lean out. But I can't do that on the ones that I have the zipper on the foot side because it just doesn't work. I've got to actually sit up. Oh, man.
Now, here's something to take into consideration that is less about convenience and more about just comfort, because you never think about a bug net on your hammock affecting your comfort level, but it will absolutely retain heat. So if you're camping, you know, especially down here in South Carolina where it gets to, you know, nuclear temperatures, that bug net will absolutely stifle you.
Yeah, it takes away the breeze. The breeze doesn't go through it quite as well. Yep, for sure.
So that's definitely another consideration. Maybe somebody can come up with a breezier option, like a less thick weave, maybe, for people that don't like bugs but also like to camp in the summertime in the South.
Right.
That might be my $1 million idea.
There you go. Go with it. Run with it. Take it to Shark Tank. It's worked for others.
Right. I've been watching that for weeks now. I'm basically a Shark Tank expert. But that begs the question, Mark, do you have a preference? The integrated, the Franke style, what's your go-to?
Yeah, so, I mean, for years now, since I've moved away from the Franke, I love having zippers. I love being able to zip it closed, open it, get out, and not have to worry about finding the hole, opening it up in the middle of the night. So I think my preference is zippers on both sides, but this new design that I'm going to is a little bit different and a little bit out there, and we're going to see whether or not it works. It's more towards the sock way. And you know, there's different socks too. There's the summer socks that the whole top is bug net, and then there's winter socks where there's usually just a vent, kind of like a top cover. And then you can rotate it to kind of change the amount of venting that you get.
You know what's really strange from this conversation is I love my integrated net. My dream hammocks both have them. They're fantastic. I wouldn't trade them for the world. I'm feeling a little bit nostalgic for the Bugginator. I'm not going to lie. I'm half tempted to see if I can dig around and find it and try it out a little bit more this summer.
Yeah. So this new setup that I'm doing, it's going with a completely netless hammock, just a basic gathered end hammock. It's got a ridge line, and that's about all the bells and whistles this hammock has. And I'll tell you what, I set it up the other day and it was just kind of nice not to have to worry about anything, just to sit in it, lay whatever way I wanted and just kind of, hang out. You know, it's different. It's not what I've been doing for a long time.
This is the time of year when I really appreciate the simplicity of hammock camping. Like, the bugs aren't so bad yet. It's still nice and cool in the evenings. You can literally get away with, you know, a cheap Chinese doo-doo hammock from Walmart if that's what you really want to do. And that's phenomenal. I'm loving it.
Hey, if a cheap doo-doo hammock from Walmart gets you out there, I'm all for it.
Absolutely. I've been saying that for years now. As long as you're out there, you're doing it right. But I think I have exhausted everything I can say about a bug net. How about you?
Yeah, I think I'm there.
It's a great topic. We've burned up almost 20 minutes just on bug nets, and we didn't even get that excited about really anything. Maybe stoves. But
I do like
this
stoves.
Has been a great, gosh, that's your fetish, I know. But it's been a great question. We really appreciate it. And Natasha Tucker, y'all keep the questions like that coming in. A lot of people ask questions that may seem simple, may seem stupid, and none of them are. Everybody had to start somewhere. And so these simple, you know, what's your insulation recommendations? Tell me something about insulations. What can you guys tell me about bug nets? You know, it doesn't have to be hammock related. We talked about stoves, like Mark just got off on. We talk about the AT and safety and things like that. So, I mean, you guys ask the questions and we'll be here to answer them every month. By and large, mostly at least one of us will be here guaranteed for this segment.
Yeah. And you know what? If you've got a question, I guarantee you someone else out there has the same question. So don't think it's a stupid question. Throw it out there. We'll answer it. That's what we're here to do.
Yeah. You know, before we disappear, somebody asked not too long ago, this is just something that I saw in passing, asking about the 83% structural ridgeline for a hammock. Yeah. I don't know where that number came from, but it's just kind of a rule of thumb. That would be a good question to ask, you know?
Here's a really good for the, just because we brought up 83%. 83% happens to equate to 10 inches a foot. So if you've got a 12-foot hammock, that's 120 inches. If you've got a 10-foot, that's 100 inches. So just easy, simple math for you.
I am an engineer, and not even I put that together before. Never came up with that before. But it makes perfect sense, and I'm glad you said something. That's going in my little notebook of cool stuff about hammocks that I didn't know.
But since we're kind of on a little tangent talking about that, that's just a guideline. Some people like it a little bit shorter. Some people like it a little bit longer. That's a starting point. Play with it.
You know what? We're going to just do this thing. We're going to do two topics this month because why not? 83%, great place to start. That's just for a structural ridgeline. But then you get into things like an adjustable structural ridgeline. And it's effectively just a big, long whoopee sling that goes from one end to the other end, and you can make it what you want it to be. You can make it 84%. You can make it 82%. Play with it and find that sweet spot that makes you super comfortable, gets rid of that calf ridge. Yeah. That whatever makes you comfortable. If you're not super into doing it by the numbers, if you're like, 83%, nobody cares about that. You do you, boo.
There you go. I agree.
Now that the tangent's over, this has been your monthly hanging out with Gresham Spagyver. You got a two for this month. I apologize for that, but it makes up for last month's. So, I'm Gresh. You can find me online.
I'm Spagyver.
Gresh Outdoors. You can find Spagyver at Spagyver Backpacking all over the YouTubes and the Facebooks. Instagram, are you Instagramming, Mark?
Nah, I've got one. I don't use it.
I tried to pimp you so hard and you just let me down.
I just can't get into it.
Anyway, have fun. You guys have a great month, and we'll talk to you again for episode 46.
Take it easy, guys.
So normally when we do our episodes, we like to do a vendor, and then we like to switch over to someone who is a character or somebody who's got some popularity on the internet as a hammock camper. And although this month we have Frozen, we're going to bring another vlogger on, which is Tim Watson, who's a very popular hammock camper and amateur camper in general. I had a great conversation with him, and I think it will be a lot of fun to talk to next month about his experiences on the trail and his experience is getting himself up to speed as a hammock camper.
Yeah, he's got a good show. I've watched a few of his episodes. I've been following him for a while, and it's a real enjoyable show and YouTube channel that he has there. All right, so a comment we have from this month, Jonathan, we have James actually going with the international theme. James from Scotland from Podbean regarding episode 18. I really got to point out the ignorance of Alex that was being interviewed. I'm also from the UK, but felt cringe when he was short answers like his idea product solves every camping and saying that hammocks hinder a camper. Obviously, he had no knowledge of hammocks, i.e. asimlay, longer hammocks, and bridge hammocks. His product is great if that's what you're looking for, but to shun hammocks in the vein that everyone would use his method, he seemed to alienate himself from hammock community and campers in general. Tents are comfortable if done correctly. Hammock camping is comfortable with knowledge and equipment, and tree tent suspension is comfortable if you're more than one person or group. Anyway, camping is camping. Get knowledgeable and be comfortable. James from Scotland, enjoying your podcast and lounging in my DIY gathered and Arctic camo hammock. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, that was a long one. Thank you, James. Yeah, obviously an inventor is going to be a big advocate for his own product, and probably that probably weighs in on how Alex felt about his own product. That was from Tensile, episode 18. Right. And really neat product, and definitely a niche.
Yeah, which you actually have one, don't you?
I picked one up to review, and I intend to do a review in the next couple episodes, yeah.
Thanks to Shug for the donation, buying us a couple of Timmy's Double Doubles to celebrate our Canadian interviews. Also, thanks to Frank Suzuki, for his generous donation.
Yeah, Shug, this is not the first time you've donated to the podcast, and thank you. We're really grateful for you and for all of our other donors who've made it a little bit easier to get through the day with donations for cups of coffee or whatever, and it's very generous.
And that's the show for this month. As always, you can find us at www.hyohpodcast.com or on our Facebook page at HYOH Podcast. If you like what you hear, please give us a positive review on iTunes, or even better, you can buy us a cup of coffee by going directly to hyohpodcast.com/donate. And making a one-time donation.
Yeah. Also, don't forget to tell your friends about us, and be sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Podbean, apparently, or your favorite podcast app.
As always, if you want to comment or have a question, please visit our Facebook page, or you can send me an email at mark@hyohpodcast.com.
And me at jonathan@hyohpodcast.com. Finally, special thanks to Skidvon Ark for allowing us to use his music for our intro and our outro, and to ITX for hosting our podcast. Thanks, everyone, for hanging around. A thin piece of fabric suspended in the air. Should I even try it?
Man, should you even dare?
Had two straps and a couple of toggles. How this would even work, my mind began to boggle. Yeah.